Welcome in to yet another edition of the Return of the Roar podcast. Frankie Hardicelli, Chris Watkins, as always. It is Friday morning. We're recording here. Frankie, I don't know how these guys keep doing it, man, but they find new ways to hit rock bottom. I think like at this point, it might have been a month ago, we had an episode called Rock Bottom, How I've Missed You. And ever since then, it's literally gone south. Like somehow they have found new depths to dig, and they are they have 18 wins and 30 something losses at this point. It just seems like all hope is gone for any, I mean, not for fans. I think fans have been without hope for a while now, but I think organizationally, I think it's getting to the point where it's malpractice to just think that this team is going to salvage anything from this season. And yet here we are in the thick of trade rumors and inching towards a trade deadline here in a couple weeks. And we're still out here hearing rumors that the Kings are adamant that they are not going to use this deadline to sell. They want to improve this team supposedly for this season. And with that has come some questions on what we will actually see come trade deadline if this team is going to be true to their word. Obviously, Ben Simmons rumors we've discussed since the summer. Domantas Sabonis rumors have kind of quieted down, but that's kind of in the background now. Now we're in a new wave of John Collins rumors, and I've seen some Jerry and Grant whispers also sprinkled about. Frankie, where are you at with this trade deadline season? I mean, just so many rumors going on. How are you managing sifting through everything, and what are your emotions at this point in time?
Off
the court, because we're obviously not going to discuss on the court product.
Yeah, the trade deadline is like I still like this. This morning I looked at the calendar and we still have 2 weeks. 2 weeks from yesterday to go. It's just, it's super. I'm at the kind of done point. I'm not really looking. We're hearing things and we're seeing things and stuff like that, but nothing's coming to fruition. And I'm kind of at the point where I'm just going to let it coast. I'm just going to let, you know, like driving a Tesla, take my hand off the wheel, let it drive itself, have a soda pop, watch the traffic go by. Hope I don't die, you know, in a car accident. Sorry, dark, morbid. Things are morbid right now. Things are dark right now.
Gosh.
Had to take it that route. No pun intended. Things are really tough. Things are really tough. I don't want to talk about the on-court play that much, but no, I was watching the Celtics game and just getting through it, honestly.
We should just mention that the Kings were down by 60 and ended up losing by 50-plus.
My sister came in and checked the score and was like, oh, that can't be right.
Oh, the scoreboard's broken. That's an interesting development in this game. Wow.
No, that's right. They're down by 60 points. And everyone that's listening, what were you doing 30 years ago? Because
I was Sacramento, not alive.
I was not alive either. And the Kings have not lost a game by that many points since before the year 1992. So it was in the memorable winter of 1991. Everyone remembers the winter of 1991. What a memorable year. Mm-hmm. Kings lost by, I think, 62 that night to the Golden State Warriors. I have to say, like, my stance on the deadline right now is I'm uninterested. As soon as there's like some real fire to the smoke, I'll tap back in. We'll listen to the rumors, and if we hear things, you know, we're at the games and stuff like that and talking to people. You know, it's nice to know what's kind of going on behind the scenes, and we kind of have an idea. I mean, everyone has an idea at this point now. It's pretty out there, we think. I know there's like the saying that only 5% of all NBA rumors or anything are the ones that come out. Everything else is super behind the scenes and never, you know, sees the light of day. But I'm kind of just uninterested. I was going to tweet yesterday, and I erased it because it just sounds like me being a little crybaby. I've never been this negative about the Kings in my life. I have not been this negative. And last year when I started reporting on games and covering them, people would come at me and kind of say I was like they thought I was like a shill, like just trying to spin things positively. And I didn't like it. No, and I didn't like it that people thought that. But well, for sure. But everybody thought that. I mean, I tried. I remember saying about a lot of things in life. I say, you know, being positive is just giving things negative energy, like putting negative energy, negative thoughts into things doesn't do you any good. And for this, though, I don't know how you could feel anything other than negative thoughts. This is a train wreck. It's a train wreck. And people, last thing, I'll turn it over to you, Chris, so I don't go on too long and just rant. But I added the numbers up before the game against the Hawks. Because people always say, oh, you think this teams are bad? You have no idea what it was like in the 90s. It's like, you know, I'm kind of tired of hearing that. Like, I don't want to hear that anymore. And the reason why is from 1985 to 1998, so that's from when the Kings came to Sacramento until they made the playoffs the first time in 1998. They had a 386 win, 680 loss record. That goes out to a 36% winning percentage. Then the Kings win the playoffs 8 straight years from 99 to 2006. Now, in the midst of our 16-year drought, going to be 16-season drought, from 2007 to present, the Kings have a 455 win, 789 loss record. Chris, that levels out more years and more games granted, but to the same exact 36% winning percentage. So I was kind of happy with people saying, you guys don't have any idea how bad the Kings were back. No, I mean, they're pretty bad. They've been pretty bad for almost two decades now. So I don't think we need to like compare it to it isn't so bad. It's bad right now. And us saying, oh, it's not as bad as it whatever. It's a cop out to how horrific the team has been for the last 16 years, obviously, but more so this season with the talent they have and losing by 53 points, the worst loss in 30 years. The Kings are on the verge of another elongated losing streak. They've lost five in a row, and they're probably going to lose more. You know, they play the Sixers tomorrow, who are one of the better teams in the league. Then they play the Knicks, who have been playing, they're hot or cold. Then you get Brooklyn and Golden State. We'll get into the schedule later, but stop saying that out there. Stop saying, I know the Kings went 1-41 or 1-40 on the road in 1991 or 90, but guess what? They also went like 25-6 home or 17 at home. It's not the same. These Kings aren't going to go 25-17 at home. They might not even win 25 games at this rate. They keep losing 18 wins right now with what, 30 games left. So, I'm miserable, and it's nice to kind of let it finally come out. I think a lot of people, well, not a lot of people, maybe some people out there like me have suppressed it and tried to stay positive and get through it. But as someone who's been a fan my whole life, worked for the team, covered the team, I'm over it. I'm ready for them to start being good again. And I think everybody's ready for that too. So I now turn it to you and ask you, Chris, because you've been more, I guess I'll say to your credit, realistic about how bad the team has been over, you know, you've kind of been the voice of reason. So have the last couple of days had any effect on you at all?
First off, I just want to say that like only, I'm not going to single it out. I'll just say that it's a funny state of affairs that fans can find a way to like be hipster about losing. Like, oh, like, you think this is bad? Like, I've been losing since 1985. Like,
why are we comparing?
This is not like, that's not something to boast about. Like, oh, you think this on-court product is bad? Back in my day, like, that was bad, okay? You want to see a team get booed off the court? You should have seen the fucking 80s, man. The 80s were crazy. But that, like, I digress. To answer your question, these past 2 weeks, I mean, or whatever, you know, however, it really does feel like I tweeted out the other day that like this team at this point is so unwatchable and has been for, I really can't pinpoint a specific game where they became unwatchable, but they really just are putting out zero effort the past, it feels month or so. And it's been strange. It's really, I was talking with Jason Ross yesterday. Shout out, everyone, go watch the video me and Jason put together.
It's so good.
Of Dr. Jason Ross.
Jason has a second act, like a talent coming.
That guy he's gonna act. Crazy talented. Anyway, and we were talking yesterday just, what were we talking about? About, sorry, I still have morning mind here. Oh my gosh.
How bad the team is?
Yes. Oh my gosh. About how we think, or we thought that we knew, like we pride ourselves on knowing basketball. Like we feel as if we watch a team and we've watched enough NBA games to know, like, all right, like these guys should be here. These guys should be here again. Like, I feel like if I watch enough Warrior games, I can be like, all right, like obviously Steph Curry is good, but you know, this is why Draymond is so great. And Kuminga, this is what he X, Y, and Z. This Kings team has just broken me. Like, I watch them play. I see what happens, and they're just bad. Like, there's not really one specific thing that you can point out. Like, when, you know, obviously when you lose by 60, everything is going bad, but like they're just so much, like, it just doesn't make sense. Like, the team is too, and I think Harrison Barnes even said it after, it was either after the Hawks game or after the Celtics game, that on an individual level, he has been on worse teams. Like, he has been on less talented teams. But for whatever reason, or, you know, this is, I haven't looked at it, but this has to be like the worst record of Harrison Barnes's career.
Yeah, I want to say maybe he had a worse year in Dallas, which led to them getting Luka. Let me just go ahead and double check on that real quick. Dallas in 2016-17, they went 33-49. Then the next year, the second year he was in Dallas, they went 24-58. So this is the second worst team that he's ever been on. Yeah, because he was traded the next year. They went 33-49, and the Kings probably will not win 33 games this year. So, it would have been this. It would be again. I don't think Harrison's going to be here. In a couple weeks, we'll get to that later. But
yeah,
nor should he be. Real quick, what makes me sad? I was talking to I mentioned my mom and my sister on here a lot, but they talk to me. They love the Kings and they're so invested, and they always want to talk to me about it. But I was talking to her yesterday about it, and you know, a lot of people feel this way too. I think they like these players. Like, my mom was like, I love Harrison Barnes. I love Rashawn Holmes. I love. Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah, I know, and like they all are really, really good guys. Like they're great with the media. They're great in the locker room. They're great with the fans. And it is sad. It's sad that the team can't put it together and they can't win here, and they deserve better. And I kind of said to her, you know, mom, like it's a business and they're going to be a lot better. Like, believe it or not, I know it'll be sad for us, but for you Kings fans out there, but Harrison Barnes deserves to go play winning basketball. Like he deserves better than this. Everyone deserves better than this. The fans deserve better than this. People shouldn't put their time into watching this game. How about the players that go out there and they try to play their hearts out and it doesn't amount to anything. And that's what I'm seeing is I'm not seeing everyone giving that same effort. I'm not seeing everyone giving the same effort that Harrison Barnes gives on a nightly basis, the same effort that Tyrese Haliburton gives on a nightly basis. Rashawn Holmes out there, who's had a really, really tough year trying to get back into shape, and he's been looking better while doing it over the past couple of games, but to no avail. And obviously injuries are a thing. I know De'Aaron's been out the last couple of games, which the circumstances of that are a little strange just because he played how – the ankle injury is nothing serious, but then he's missed three games, I believe. So that's super interesting to me, just as far as Alvin saying it's nothing at all. And if it was a playoff game, which a lot of people did not like that quote, poor Brendan Nunez put that quote out and people started like going at him. It wasn't his quote. He's saying what Alvin said. Alvin literally said, if it was a playoff game, which Kings fans all, you know, it's nails on a chalkboard. Said if he'd be playing, well, then he didn't play the next three games. But I digress. The main thing I'm saying is it's sad because these players like Harrison, who will probably be moved. It's sad that I'm almost happy for them because they're going to be in a better place. They're going to move on, and Harrison probably will be playing for a team like the Ben Simmons trade isn't likely, but if you were to play for a team like the Sixers, or we're going to get into John Collins rumors, that's a realistic possibility, in my opinion, that Harrison could be playing for the Hawks, who could get back into the Eastern Conference playoff race pretty quickly here. So it's bittersweet, but I'm really ready to see this group broken up. I know they've been here for 3-4 years now. The core that we've talked about so many times, De'Aaron, Marvin, Harrison, Rashawn, Buddy, but it's time to say goodbye. It's time to say goodbye to this group, because it clearly, if anyone out there is not, you know, paying close enough attention, it's not working. So we've reached the end of the road. The only problem is, like you said, Chris, the front office has made it clear they don't want to wave a white flag. And Carmichael Dave said yesterday on the air that he thinks that maybe that might be a little bit of a smokescreen in itself. Like, the Kings might be internally discussing that they are not going for the play-in still. But the fact that they really want to keep continuing to roll this thing going forward is just a little concerning to me. Which brings me to ask you, the trade rumors that have come up recently, the freshest batch of rumors have been the Atlanta Hawks are looking to move John Collins, who is disgruntled with his role, and the Lakers, for whatever reason, still are enamored with the possibility of bringing Buddy Hield into the fold. They're looking to move Talen Horton-Tucker, and according to Mark Spears of Yahoo Sports, they've even offered that to the Kings. I think they've offered Talen Horton-Tucker in like a future first, possibly. I'm not sure if the first is included in that. I need to double check, but if those are the two moves the Kings hypothetically could make, how do you feel about those? Like, do you feel like they should swing a trade for Collins? And I know the return that Atlanta's looking for is an impact starter on pick. Would you feel comfortable giving up Harrison Barnes, first round pick, or Davion Mitchell, or both, to bring in a player like that?
If definitely Harrison Barnes, I think is a great place to start with a John Collins deal. I think it's been said many times that any good trade should hurt equally for both teams, or both teams should feel kind of like they didn't win the trade a little bit. I think that would be fair. I think if you throw in Davion, for sure, that could potentially be something that Atlanta would really, you know, look at and like to have on their team, especially after he really played really good defense on Trae Young the other day. And I think that could also complement Trae as well. A nice little backup point guard who's kind of a nice juxtaposition between you know, Trae Young and there is a nice juxtaposition between Trae Young and Davion Mitchell. Obviously, Trae Young is an offensive superstar, and Davion could just kind of come in and focus on locking down. And obviously, that is not Trae Young's cup of tea. And Harrison would be a good fit, I think. I think he would bring a calming presence to that team. And, you know, Harrison is a big fan of sometimes not always imposing his impact on the game. And I think playing with Trae Young would suit him very well for that. I think, you know, he would get his, you know, 10 shots a game, and he would really be super efficient with it. And on the Kings side, I think John Collins is an exciting young player. I think you mentioned before he's locked up for 4 years. So that would be good for the Kings. He just signed an extension, I think, actually last season.
First year of a five-year max extension.
Perfect. So, yeah, I think he would fit in nice at the four. He's good size, 6'8", 6'9".
Athletic.
Give you some good athleticism. You know, isn't the best defender, but I think he's averaging a block a game, which is a nice, you know, nice thing to have at the four.
And it's something Marvin Bagley has never done.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I don't really think Collins could slide to the three or the five at all, but maybe in some smaller lineups he could play five. It would be interesting. I'm not a big fan of leaving a big gap at the three. I think that's one of the most position. I think it is the most important position in for contending teams. Not that the Kings are there yet, obviously, but you know, I think it was slide. They'd probably, you know, if they were going to do both deals, they would put Horton Tucker at that three position. And that's interesting enough. It's kind of like it's funny to use Kyle Kuzma as the big example, but like he's like Kyle Kuzma light. He's very, you know, can do a little bit of everything, but isn't really great at anything specific. And it would be interesting to see him grow. Obviously, the Lakers were very, very big on him in this offseason. They didn't sign Alex Caruso because they would rather give the money to Talen Horton Tucker. There's the Tyrese Halliburton connection, which I'm a very large fan of. I would be an even bigger fan if they can just complete the whole circle. I think I've said this before on the pod, but if we can get Malik Monk and Talen Horton Tucker and just have that college reunion for Fox and Halliburton of their two wingmen, I'd be all for the feels, because if we're going to lose, we might as well have our
fun.
Stars
have
be
more
fun.
Fun. Yeah. Have more fun.
And I think those are two decent swings, you know, like if they don't pan out again, at least you made your stars happy and they had fun playing with their guys. And, you know, if they win, it's going to be even sweeter because they'll be like, these are our guys. We talked about this in college. You know, we count how many times did we see DeMarcus Cousins always talking about how him and John Wall really, really wanted to play together. It kind of happened a little bit in Houston, but not really.
That was strange.
I think these guys definitely think about that kind of stuff.
I forgot about that. They did play together for, I think, what, 5, 6, 7 games?
Yeah, I think DeMarcus was on a 10-day and something. I think one of them got hurt.
How is Boogie doing in Denver? Is he playing?
I saw that he had some big turnover the other day. He also got ejected the other day I saw. But he's kind of coming in for 10 minutes, putting up 10 points and like 4 rebounds and just kind of
6-6.
It's a little bit of a circus show, you know? It's like DeMarcus comes out and it's like, hey, there's that guy that used to be amazing.
Boogie.
Yeah, maybe he'll be amazing for us. And he like shoots threes still and it'll go 0-3.
I was wondering,
or he'll go 3-3.
I was wondering if he was going to be in town when the Nuggets come to town on the 28th or 26th. And I don't know if he'll – it's a 10-day deal. I can't imagine that the Nuggets will keep him. But I don't think he's played in Sacramento in over – I think he only came to town once, I think, as a player, just once. So this would be
when he was in New Orleans.
Yeah, and he went like for 40, 20, 10. Yep. So believe it or not, it'd be only the second time he's ever come back and played against the Kings at Golden 1.
crazy.
No, John Collins, one thing he can do is shoot, which surprises me.
Yeah.
Sorry.
You're good. I can cover. He's really expanded his range. He used to kind of just be a corner three shooter and he was pretty efficient at that. But now I was literally just looking at his shot chart before we started recording, and he's really rounded it out all across the perimeter from the head top of the key to the corner three. I think he's at 40% on all spots or hovering around 40% on
first career
on all the locations.
38% for his career, which is honestly very surprising to me. And I believe that's on a lot of attempts. That's on for his career. He's 268 for 693. That's 38% for his career. That's not like a small sample size. He's taken hundreds per season at this rate. He took 160, 208, 133 so far this year over half a season. So he's definitely a guy that can knock down the jumper. So
also probably the best nickname to come to the Kings maybe since Boogie. Like Boogie was just a great one for him, but like in terms of just a singular nickname, like John the Baptist
that would be incredible,
especially, you know, I went to Christian Brothers and that's LaSalle. St. John Baptist is I'm very familiar with that guy, so John the Baptist was
familiar with this work.
Like, yeah, I was like, all right, that's clever. I like it because he really, and that's the thing too, is like how many, I mean, we can count on our hand, on one hand, how many elite athletes like that have the Kings had? I mean, obviously Derek Williams, who was the first time the Kings had really seen an athlete like one of these new age athletes that just leap out of the gym. Derek Williams really, I mean, the fact that Derek Williams was so special, I think speaks volumes to how, you know, how few players the Kings have had like that. Just real dunk champions. Gerald Wallace, obviously.
And T-Rob, I guess you.
Yeah, he had some night. He had that put back in the preseason against the Lakers, which is.
Who are you going to say, funny. Ben?
No, I was actually going to say, I think you have to put Willie Cauley-Stein on that list.
Oh, sweet Lord.
I really think you do. Like, I mean,
so the 4-year anniversary, I believe, of De'Aaron Fox's putback dunk, was
against Miami.
Yeah. And our friend John, and John Bull, is his last name Bull? I think it's John Bull, on Twitter.
Great.
I think his username is it, how do you say that name?
Heuristic lineup.
Heuristic, I know some of those words.
I've always thought that. I'm like, I don't know what that word means, but
he put up. I know that's just us.
It's like a Wu-Tang name generator.
We need to educate ourselves. But yeah. he posted the tweet of the year and putting the putback dunk in Miami, and he pointed out how hilarious is it. Willie Cauley-Stein is, where is he on a game winning situation where it's a jump shot? He's not in the paint, not even near the key. He's backpedaling by half court. Our starting 7-foot center is backpedaling away
for the
from
game,
the,
like
away
the
from
game,
the play.
Like, this is the last play of the game, and the guy is like, "All right, let's head back to the locker room."
And I'm
get back on D.
I think someone I can't remember what someone said in the comments. It's something funny, like he would have said after the game, "Yeah, I was just making sure I used my athleticism to get back and just cut off the the fast break." It's like, no, dude, the game's over after this play. Like, if De'Aaron doesn't dunk that ball, the game. The clock goes to zero. So,
well, he was probably watching Bam Adebayo and being like, dang,
I could beat it.
Yeah. I could do that. There's no reason why I can't do that. Like, I watch his game and I'm like, I could do all that stuff and better. Crazy.
I feel bad now though.
Like, I remember when that quote dropped, that was crazy. Like, the second he said it, I mean, obviously no one was thinking Willie Cauley-Stein could be Kristaps Porzingis, but like, I cannot imagine. Like, I digress. I just don't. Well,
apparently, the story was
universe.
He was like leaving the arena, and the media caught him like in the tunnel. Like, and he said that then. I think he kind of just was on in one of those moods and just kind of went on like a tangent. I think he had a good game that night, and
he was feeling himself.
Maybe it was the 18 rebound game, and then literally the next night on a back to back, he had zero. So 18 rebounds one night. Zero the next. No, I feel kind of bad. Willie Cauley-Stein has been out for majority of the season because of personal reasons.
Yeah.
And then the Mavericks cut him, and there hasn't been any explanation. So we joke. Hope you're okay, Willie. But
I did a list in the past of how many like Kings from like the 2016 roster are still in the NBA, and I think Willie was like one of the three.
Should we look right now?
Sure. Yeah, let's go ahead and look, because like, it was obviously Isaiah Thomas was out of the league. DeMarcus was out of the league for a while. Ben was in and out of the league. I think Ben honestly might have been one of those players.
Chris, 15, 16 or 16, 17?
Doesn't matter. Okay. I really don't think it's going to matter, because it's going to be like Zach Randolph, Justin Jackson, Iman Shumpert. Like, none of those guys are still in the league. And this is
like
5 years ago at this point.
Is Darren Collison back out of the league again?
No. He sign a 10-day, but I don't think he's played.
He's gone. He played three games, but he's not on the team anymore. Okay. So to answer your question, the amount of players that are still in the NBA today, I believe, is three. Yeah. Seth Curry.
Oh, there you go. Long time. Going to be in this league a long time.
Long time. And he actually is the best player out of everyone that is still, which is so hilarious. God, I don't want to get into that. Okay. There's four, actually. Seth Curry, mm-hmm. Rudy Gay, who's mm-hmm. he's on the back nine, probably on the 17th, 18th hole at this point. Rajon Rondo, same thing, 17th, 18th hole. DeMarcus Cousins, who is playing like on the 19th, 20th hole. so it's –
Move it one more year forward.
One more year forward, I would imagine there's probably less people that are still in the NBA. Yikes. Oh, Lord. I'm going to take Buddy Hield out because he's still on the team. So anyone that's not named Buddy Hield, we have Rudy Gabe still in the league, Ben McLemore.
Fighting.
And Garrett Temple. That's it. That's it.
Oh, my gosh.
That's it. Rudy Gabe. Ben McLemore, Garrett Temple, every single other player on that team is out of the league right now. all of them.
I would say, you know, I don't know how many years Rudy has left, but that's like a year away from being a year away.
I believe he signed a 2-year, which I was surprised that he signed a multi-year deal at 35 years old, but he's still, he's playing well. He is seriously, if he's healthy and he does have health issues, but if he's on a 3-year deal, he's under contract all of next year. Then he has a player option in 2024. He'll be 30. I think he'll be 39 at the end of his contract. He'll be 38, 39 years old at the end of his contract. So Rudy's going to play until he's almost 40. And he probably can if he's healthy enough. I mean, this year he's averaging 9 points, 4.5 boards, 36 from three. Hey, that's great, man. I like Rudy a lot too. I wrote an article, anyone out there, as we kind of get through the we're just kind of rambling at this point, but who gives I can't curse. I wrote an article about how the Kings have made four big moves in the past decade. They've made four moves that are of note. Can you name them, Chris, off the top of your head?
That would be, we're talking trades, correct?
Four trades that you could look at and say, oh, that's a pretty big move. Like, wow, the Kings got that guy. The Kings got this. Like, that kind of worked out. And only two of them really are that. The other.
So
two
you're
are
saying
kind of,
since 2010, correct?
Since
that would be, well, that would be a decade.
Technically, correct? 2000.
No, I don't know.
2012 was a decade ago.
Oh, boom. Yeah, God, man, I just did this too. Where I was like, ah, man, okay, I'm stuck in 2020, y'all.
But that's COVID. But people still, and I still kind of think about 2020 a lot too. Where I think of, I never got to process 2021. But anyways, the four big moves the Kings have made over the past 10 years. Can you name, like, try to name them?
Rudy Gay and Harrison Barnes.
Two.
Well, I mean, we're clear of the Peja trade, obviously.
So the other two are kind of a trick. Like, they're not.
I mean,
trick,
Kevin Martin was he?
That was 2009 or 2010, maybe 2011.
Barely.
This is from the Pete D'Alessandro, Vlade Divac.
What would count as a big? I mean, this is like you said. So like, is trading is Tyreek? Is that one?
I don't really count that.
Ravis Vasquez.
Neither one of those players have. They don't have any. It didn't.
I'm trying to think. I mean, my answer is clearly no. But does Derek Williams count?
So the answers are, and this is my opinion. The four trades of significance over the past decade were the Harrison Barnes trade, which was fine. You know, that was a good move. A good move on paper at the time, and the Kings were going for it. Didn't work out.
DeMarcus Cousins. Oh my God.
Sheesh. Yeah. So that's one.
Gosh.
Of them. The Buddy Hield aspect of that is like, Buddy Hield turned into something, right? So that was a big. It turned into however you want to define big. Buddy's the all time 3-point shooting leader, which doesn't mean anything because the Kings haven't won anything. And then also the last thing I put on there was the bogey trade, which was so small at the time, but. He turned out to be the only one of those players out of Marquise Chris, Papagiannis, yikes, and Malachi Richardson that turned into an NBA player, and the Kings let him walk for nothing. So my point is, over the last decade, the Kings have made four moves you can consider big moves, and that's really it. They have nothing to show for them. And by the way, it's been 3 years since they traded for Harrison Barnes. So, yeah.
Can we this is interesting. I haven't ever thought to go back and really give it, you know, like an official stamp. What do you give the DeMarcus Cousins trade
for each team?
For the Kings.
Or in
from the Kings perspective, like, what would you, you know, is that a, yeah, I'll just let you take it how you
so,
will.
So the trade, I can go two different ways. The DeMarcus Cousins trade brought the Kings back Buddy Hield in a round pick for 2017, which was the 10th overall pick. That's an A for me right there. 100%. That's an A because you get two top 10 picks, right? Now, the problem is I give what Vlade did with that an F because he could have selected Bam Adebayo, Donovan Mitchell, OG Anunoby was on the board. There were so many guys on the board. Jared Allen. There were so many players on the board after 10. He traded the 10th pick for 15 and 20 and selected Justin Jackson and Harry Giles. So What he got back in the DeMarcus Cousins trade opposed like to what happened to Boogie. And I hate that his career ended the way it did because of how much Kings, like I liked watching him play. But they won that trade just by getting a player like Buddy Hield, who's been playing every game almost since. He has been a good shooter, as bad as he's been here overall, been a good shooter. He is an NBA player. He's a shooter. And they got the 10th pick. They could have drafted Donovan Mitchell or Bam Adebayo. So I give the Kings an A for the acquisition, an F for the execution. And that's how I see it. How about you?
Yeah, I wasn't even thinking about, I mean, like the pick is the big part of making it an A for sure. Because like, yeah, if you're going to get a player who is, you know, Buddy Hield is still on your roster and is, you know, still has some real value. And at the time that was not a certainty at all. Like Buddy had really struggled his half season in New Orleans and you know, it was not a guarantee that Buddy would come here and be any, like he could have just been Jimmer, honestly. Like it could have been really bad. I don't mean, maybe not that bad, but it definitely could have turned out not great. So yeah, I mean, I was more just thinking like just Buddy Hield in himself, like, is that an okay? I mean, obviously, you know, you trade your star player and then you get this guy who's just kind of like, I guess you can call him a role player decent team.
At the time, I think that, you know, he was the 6th overall pick in the draft that year. Yeah. So you're basically, it's like,
and
you got it.
Huge in college. I mean, Matt was probably the biggest, as close to Jimmer as we've had in college. Yeah.
And then the next year, I think people started saying, oh, we won the trade. Because the next year he averaged, I think, like 18 a game or 20 a game. Mm-hmm. He was off the bench the first full year. Remember, he was like a bench guy Bogey and I think Bogey started mostly that year and Justin Jackson, yikes. But the third year in Sacramento, when they were their only year they've been decent, 18-19, all 82 games, 46% from the field, 42 from three, 20 points per game and 5 boards. Crazy. That's what got him his contract. That's crazy numbers right there. Mm-hmm. That's like crazy numbers. And 2.5 assists. His turnovers were down. It's just, I don't know what happened.
I mean,
but he's gone.
I think his role just kind of got diminished. I think, you know, at that time they really were like, this is a weapon for us and we need to utilize him and put him in the best positions possible. And then we just kind of saw Buddy get too much of a green light and he really, I think he's someone who really needs structure. And like once he's told, which Luke was very big on, is just kind of go out there and roll the ball out and play, you know, like it just was too much freedom for him. And, you know, I think a lot of players will thrive in that kind of situation. And I think Buddy could thrive in that situation. I just think he needs checks and balances on it. Like I think if he were to go to the Lakers, like I don't think that he would be the player that we see. I mean, he would be more like the player we've seen the past month. But
if he goes to the Lakers, does that? I hate to say it. I think it'd be good for him as far as I could see him just going not crazy.
Bananas. He would go bananas. No, he would go bananas. He would have a couple games where like he drops 30. Like LeBron would.
LeBron's passing. Oh my god, LeBron's passing, and the fact that Buddy, if LeBron just tells him, hey man, just move out the ball and run around like you do already. Yeah. I'm gonna find you, or I'm gonna get my buckets. But like, just be open, and I'll hit you.
Yeah, because that's the thing is like with a player like LeBron, the Kings. I'm gonna say this on record: the Kings don't have a player like LeBron James.
What?
LeBron just has his own gravitational pull, dude. And like Buddy could just play the whole game 3 steps behind the 3-point arc, and that would make it worth the trade for them. I mean, like. The fear of Buddy on that team would be the Lakers' biggest weapon, you know, biggest way of utilizing him. I think to your point, like I think he would go crazy.
Well, he's capable of running into a 30-point night on any given night. It's just, we know that he's super streaky. I will say that his shot decisions they're awful, and he's definitely pushing it right now. So, he's checked out. I know that he was laughing his ass off after they lost by 53. And Alvin Gentry was on with our boss, Nick Cattles, yesterday. And Gentry even said, hey, like, I didn't like that. Didn't love it. Like, I know it's like a different generation now, but Jordan wouldn't have done that with Bird and Magic. And not that Buddy Hield's Michael bleeping Jordan, but it's just, when you get
maybe Michael B. Jordan,
maybe Michael
Michael C. Jordan.
Yeah, we're getting down the alphabet here. It's Michael. Mike, give
C
Michael
for Trevano.
C for Trevano. Michael Trevano Jordan.
Yep,
that's his full name. Yep. So don't laugh at it. I know that they're probably friends, and I'm sure him and Jalen have some ties. I think they're in the same draft class and stuff. And yeah, that's great. Doesn't matter. He's got 60 piece pretty much in front of everybody. So
yeah, like that's pretty wild. Like Frank, you've been a part of organized teams before in the past. Like when you get waxed like that, like it doesn't matter if you're playing your dad and your mom, like you
no one's
don't
talking.
Want to see them. Like the last thing you want to do is really be like, you know what? I can't wait for this buzzer to go off because I haven't seen Jalen in months. And like, I need to say what's up.
Bro, the silence after getting just destroyed, like in the locker room in high school, like when you get killed, like in football or basketball, like the basketball loss, it's quiet.
Yeah,
anyone can relate to that.
Yeah.
Anyone out there can relate. Yeah. Just silence for the most part. Just people don't want to talk. Or people are angry and they're breaking stuff or throwing, I don't think anyone's
those
like
are
laughing
the
around.
Two reactions to have. Like, those, like, if you care at all, those are the only two reactions to have. And, like, there's one thing of being positive, being an optimist, or just, you know, letting life dictate itself or whatever. It's just a game. I can, you know, this is business. This is personal. Like, 50, they lost by what, 53, correct?
Yeah.
Something like that. Like there is no universe in which you should feel any amount of like anything but anger or like get me the absolute F out of here as fast as possible.
And that's why I'm saying he doesn't
I mean
care.
The building. Like I mean he clearly wants out of the organization.
Well, both.
I mean like
both.
Yeah.
So like that's what I'm saying is I understand like it's a game and you can't sure I get that, but I also get that as a competitor and as an athlete, you know, that's your job, and when you do that in that situation at that time, that's just like showing up to your office and like opening up a beer and like watching porn or something, saying I don't care, I don't about these rules, man. Like it's just you. He doesn't care. He does not care at all. And I take it as disrespect. Like people can say, oh, you're reading in too much into it. I don't think so. I think when you lose by 53 freaking points and you're laughing like a lot on the floor, like completely probably joking about it, making jokes about it. I don't know how the rest of his teammates felt about that. I can't imagine. I saw the faces on the bench. Tyrese looked absolutely disgusted. De'Aaron was pulling his mask like almost over his eyes. Like people on the bench looked disgusted in this. And then Buddy's laughing it up after the game. And we talked about LeBron. Would LeBron do that? Would LeBron ever do that after a 50-point loss?
Oh, my gosh. Absolutely not. And like the thing is, the only people you should want to talk to after getting beat by 50 are your teammates. Again, for like either you want to be positive and say like, hey, guys, whatever, like tomorrow's a new day, blah, blah, blah. Or to be like, y'all are garbage. Like, I would be much happier if I heard Buddy Hield went on a curse-laden rant on his teammates about their performance against the Celtics. Because at least then I would be like, well, at least a little piece of him is embarrassed and feels something. But clearly, if if you just don't care, you're like, yeah, like, that's not me. Like, this team just got beat by 50, but like, I wasn't really like, you know, a part of it. It's just wild. Like I don't think so. Reading too much into it and we're giving too much of a spin, but like, I literally cannot relate. And I think that's where I'm going to land on it. It's just
they've
like,
they've lost five in a row. Yeah. If people are going to say, oh, there's I don't, then pick a, do it on their job. I don't know. Pick a different profession. You can't lose five in a row, lose by 50, and then just be laughing up on the court like nothing happens. Okay, you don't care then. And that's what I'm saying. Do you care?
Or do it later. Like, again, like, do it later. Like, get dressed, see him in the tunnel, say what's up, say hi to the kids, whatever the hell.
Off camera.
Like, you can organize this anytime except for 3 seconds after the final whistle.
You know, you're under the spotlight. You know, there are cameras on you. There's cameras on the whatever. I just clearly he doesn't
care. Let's jersey swap, bro.
Yeah, dude. 50 piece. Let's go.
Yeah. Right on my jersey. We waxed y'all.
Yeah. Can you sign 50 piece?
Yeah.
No drink. Yeah. I don't know. We need to keep talking about the 50 point loss. Okay. So.
Yeah.
Anything? Okay. So just kind of summarize. Team's bad.
Team's bad.
Trades coming.
Trades are everywhere. Probably.
And should we do basketball reference and call it?
Yes.
Anything else you want to talk, about?
Yeah. I just want to say, like, I feel like I'm going to be a hipster about this, but I've been complaining about Monty McNair not making a move for a year and some change now.
Probably
like,
longer.
I literally remember recording last year in the KHK board op room. I think Jay Mars was in there, and I gave my Coke machine to Monty McNair. And I remember thinking, is this too early? Like, am I just like expecting, like, am I just expecting him to do something too early? Like, am I not seeing the full picture here? Maybe he's right about something. And I was thinking about it the other day. I have gotten no reward for the, I'm not asking for people to say like, Chris, you were so right. I just mean like Monty McNair has still done nothing. He is still to this day not fulfilled that, not promise, but like he still has done nothing in that year and a half.
I think
that this
George
team has needed something.
Yeah. Matt George and I, last deadline, I was in my car talking, doing an interview with him, like a Kings,
Locked on Kings.
Sorry, Matt. and I'm trying to like think about what we talked about exactly and what I said exactly. It was about Monty McNair and about how are we being too critical of him by saying, can we really evaluate him after he got hired in, I think, September, and it was like January or February, and we were already like saying, wow, Monty's going to be on the hot seat already if nothing happens. And then sure enough, nothing happened. He traded for Terrence Davis, which was a good move. He traded Nemanja Bjelica for Mo Harkless, which was okay. But yeah, you're right. It's been almost 2 years now. In September, once we get through the season and we get into the offseason, if he doesn't go through this deadline, we will enter the offseason having it be about 2 years since they hired him. July, August would be close to 2 years. So yeah, I think we're at a point now where Monty doesn't make this deadline and make something happen. I just don't know what his future looks like. I just think we're at that point. The deadline passes and nothing happens significance. Like, if the only makes is Buddy for Tim Horton Tucker, that's just not going to cut it. It's just not going to cut it. And if everybody else is still here, it's not going to work. Something's going to have to happen. So, and maybe that's all his fault. Maybe other front offices aren't cooperating. Maybe he is putting out some good presentable deals and people want more. But as a general manager, you have to have a plan B. And we've said it before, all these deals that fell through, he never had a plan B. And we're still here with the same roster from last year, pretty much about 90% intact.
Yeah. And I think I've said it before, but like, I mean, first off, I put it out on Twitter, and I had a couple people say back to me that, you know, like, we don't want Monty doing what Vladi did and just making a move to make a move. Like, that's not going to make us better or, you know, have some sort of foresight. Like, there's no need to do another Terrence Davis deal that essentially, not that Terrence isn't good, but like, that's just not going to do anything for us. And I do agree to an extent, but also like at some point, and it's Monty McNair, I do think is good at his job. I think he's a good talent evaluator. I think, the people that he has brought in and the moves he has made or almost made, have all been moves that I think were positive and would have made a real impact on the team or have made some form of impact on a team. It's just like at some point you have to put your imprint on this roster. Like this is still, we've said it countless times. This is still Vladi's team. This is pretty much the same exact players that Vladi has acquired with the exception of Tyrese Haliburton, Mo Harkless and Davion Mitchell. And it's just strange to me that Monty watches this team on a nightly basis get absolutely ran and doesn't feel the need to, again, like just kind of make a marginal move. Like it's like I'm just done waiting for the big, huge Simmons, Sabonis, whatever, you know, the big deal. There's no need for that to be the first move made. I just think that the team needs so much help in so many places that it's like you can address, like, why? And I think I've said this countless times, but why should we believe that once this first big move is made, the other moves are just going to roll in right after? There's nothing that has. I mean, if anything, we should believe that Monty is going to make one move and then completely reassess everything before he makes another move. If we should go off the past year and a half of what he's done, it definitely seems like he likes to watch how things play out first as long as humanly possible and then make his move when he feels like the time is right. Which is also strange because this is back-to-back seasons where they said that they wanted to make the playoffs. And the team has, well, last year the team was up, then down, then up, then down, in which he had a bunch of different points to eventually choose which way he truly wanted to go. This season, it's just been down. And so for him to continue to say that he has playoff aspirations, but to make no improvement on this roster when they're just clearly, I mean, I'm going to use the term tanking, but I don't mean it in the term that we know. The team is just it's on a downward trajectory going straight down.
And if they're unintentionally tanking. Yeah, they're unintentionally tanking.
If you have playoff aspirations, you should want, obviously, for your team to win and to improve your roster when you see it slipping so that that playoff goal doesn't get too far out of reach. And as I started this episode, I feel like we're at the point where those playoffs are just not, I mean, not statistically, but it's getting to the point where it's, you know, the Kings are at the sixth pick right now. You know, they're a lot closer to getting an actual good pick than they are to make the playoffs. Chris, so I don't see
if they don't make a move like this week before, like, again, the 10th deadline is irrelevant. If they don't, their deadline should be January 29th, tomorrow, 30th.
Yeah.
Because their upcoming schedule could be what fully buries them. And maybe that's what they're waiting for. Maybe they want to be fully buried because Philly, New York, Brooklyn, Golden State, Minnesota twice, the Kings are going to get buried. They're not going to win. They're not going to win half of those games, which would keep them maybe afloat. I could see them going 2-5 or 1-6 over the next 7 games. So maybe they're waiting for that. Maybe they want to lose that game to Minnesota on the 9th. And be 7.5-8 games out, and then just completely blow it up. I don't know what that looks like. Maybe they go back on their De'Aaron Fox promise. That's not likely in my book. I think that they want to keep De'Aaron and Tyrese, and they probably will. But I know that deals come to fruition in the last hour, in the last couple minutes. So it might, again, not be on Monty. It might be other teams saying, yeah, we like, for John Collins, Atlanta might be saying, we do like Harrison Barnes. We like Davion Mitchell in a first. But we're going to wait and see if maybe we can get Ben Simmons first, which kind of handcuffs the Kings. I get that. Totally. But just knowing, and again, I know making a small move just to make a move is not what people want to hear. And that's just been a phrase that people are really hanging on to right now, to not make a move, you just make a move. Okay. Well, I don't know if moving Tristan Thompson for a 2031 second round pick just to get him off the roster, just to know that they're doing something, I don't know if that'd be the worst thing in the world right now. Like, Tristan is not going to play another game for the Kings in all likelihood. Mm-hmm. That's what we've been speculating and not hearing, but kind of like kind of hearing. He's like, you know, it's done. He's not going to play again. So
maybe ever
move on.
This might really be it for Tristan Thompson. I was thinking about it the other day with all the off court stuff. Like, I just don't know why
the message or the message he sent on the TMZ stuff. Like, he said that he was going to retire. We don't need to get into it. I don't want to get into, like,
I think I did see that. Yeah, I did. Yeah.
He told the person that,
yes, you know, his,
people can just, his just Google Tristan Thompson TMZ.
Hello. You'll find a lot.
You'll find a lot. But I think that he was planning on retiring after this year. So, yeah, again, the trade deadline for Monty McNair, It should have passed already in my book. And again, I know it might not be all his fault. So we'll see what happens. But the Kings could be buried.
I mean, it's
going to
be his fault. Like, I mean, he's the general manager. It can't be anybody else's fault. I mean,
yeah, nope. You
know, Vivek can put the hardest, you know, restrictions on him in the league. And if, you know, it's his job to figure out a way to do something. Again, like even free agency acquisitions, like the Kings could have, I mean, you know, not Isaiah Thomas, but they could have, you know, added somebody. The only person that we've seen come in and give the team a new energy, not that he even, you know, actually gave them energy on the court, but like, you know, an influx of like, oh, this is a new person. Like, just, you know, when you add people to a group, it changes dynamics, even if it's slight. You know, we saw how big of an impact Iman Shumpert had. Obviously, you can bring in guys on the margins and have them still actually have an impact.
I think that's
Emmanuel Mudiay, you know?
Oh, yeah. That's literally
the only guy that is came to this team.
They're trying to do that with Tristan. I think they were trying to bring Tristan in as a guy who can kind of like light a fire up under them, and wasn't going to play a lot, but just would be a voice. And it just hasn't.
Not the best role model, Tristan Thompson.
Yeah. I mean, the off the court stuff has really thrown a damper on all of that.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
In closing on that, Marvin just wanted to say, I like what I've been seeing from him. And it's really sad because he's starting to unlock things, and it's going to happen, Chris. He's going to go on to somewhere else, probably Detroit. I know Detroit really want him.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he's going to be a good basketball player. And I think it's really going to be one of those Seth Curry situations where I think we just waited one more year really could have been it, but I know it's been long enough and the marriage is probably over, but I see him being like a 17-7, 18-8 guy next year. Prediction. We'll come back and listen to this a year from now and see if I'm right. But when he's playing for the Detroit Pistons, averaging 18-8 on like 48% shooting, I think we're all going to be a little bummed. So,
yeah. I mean, I'm ready for the MTV crew to come to my house and shoot True Life. I love Marvin Bagley, the basketball player.
My name's Chris. I'm 26 years old and I love Marvin Bagley.
Yep. I'm fully ready for that. I've been a big supporter of Marvin, even through his most trying times. I've always felt like he was just too talented to deny on this roster. And, you know, it's been on both sides of the fence a masterclass of how to just completely ruin a relationship. So
I feel like we do obituaries.
Both play equal parts.
We've been doing obituaries at the end of every podcast, like saying almost like unofficial goodbyes to players before they're even gone. And that's always so sad to me. If anyone out there was like listening to this, it's not a Kings fan. They just want to kind of see maybe someone's drinking tears because they maybe wanted to hear Kings fans cry or whatever. But the fact that we're just saying, oh, yeah, we already know they're going to go off somewhere else and play better. We already know like Harrison Barnes is going to go to Atlanta or be a huge part of that playoff team. We already know that Marvin Bagley is going to go to Detroit and help them with their rebuild. And we already know.
They're just not going to help us.
Buddy Hield's going to go to the Lakers and help them make a run in the playoff. It's like, okay, let's just get through the other stuff and just get, you know, add it on to our plate of pain. So.
Yep. And that just adds to the confusion of, I just don't understand, man, because we're going to see a lot of these guys go to other teams, like you said, and have impact. And we're always, it's been a question for so many years now of just, why didn't he do that for us? Why couldn't he, I see him doing this on this playoff team and in the playoffs. Why didn't it work out for us? And it's always just this, I was going to say it's the same story, but I honestly don't know what the story is because I can't answer why it feels like year after year, you will see somebody in the playoffs making a huge impact. And you're like, how is Alec Burks averaging 15 points a game in the playoffs? And he literally couldn't get off the bench for us. And it's just every, you know, Alec Burks was, you know, whatever last year and the year before that it was whoever, Tyreke Evans. And I don't know if Tyreke
down the list
playoffs, but it's just,
he did
it's
not.
A weird, weird team. Very
did
weird
he?
Team.
Did he in Indiana? I don't think he did.
Well, he went.
See.
dumb that last year in Indy. I mean, and I know Kings fans have asked for Tyreek Evans to come back to the team. I am not the biggest fan of that idea, but
Chris, you've been in the playoffs twice.
With New Orleans?
Yeah.
I feel like I vaguely remember that.
That team made the playoffs with Monty Williams. They went 45-37 with Drew. Jimmer was on that team. Ryan Anderson. They got swept by Golden State in the first round, though. That was the year that Golden State won the finals. But Tyreek Evans, just in case we were wondering. Sorry, but I know I cut you off.
No, you're good.
Anthony Davis on that team. Eric Gordon. Tyreek Evans. Quincy Pondexter. Omar Asik. That was a starting lineup. Jimmer Fredette on the bench. Drew Holiday on the bench. Must have been hurt.
Tyreek Ryan Evans, Anderson is number one pick on the I would have bet my loved house him. That he would have been on the Kings.
Dude, for
I
years.
I didn't love it was him, but I definitely. I mean, he's obviously a local guy. Went to Oak Ridge High School.
It was speculated,
I think he is a Kings fan.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think he almost signed with us when he signed his, like, whatever. He signed some crazy contract, I think, with the Rockets. And he almost signed with the Kings that offseason.
He's being paid this year. He got stretched.
I was guaranteed. It's like $16 million or something.
He's being paid. Like that, he's making more money than Terrence Davis this year. He's making $5 million. And he hasn't played in, I think, 3 years.
What was Ryan Anderson? What was he making per year?
Do you want to guess how much money?
I'm going to say $16 million, but how much money he's made in his career?
Yeah.
$125 million.
You're close. $114 million. It's a lot of money.
It's got to be the richest Sacramento athlete. I mean, yeah. We'll ask Sean Cunningham about this, but richest Sacramento athlete ever. That's what I'm going to go with for Ryan Anderson.
And his best year of his career, which was the year before he entered free agency in 15-16. It was before Golden 1 opened. Everyone was saying, oh, my God, he's going to come to Sacramento. He's going to open the new arena. He averaged 20 points, 7 rebounds. He shot 36% from three. Everyone was saying he's only 28. He's going to come to Sacramento and come home. And he took a huge contract with the Rockets, and that never that was the end of it. That was the end of his career.
He would have been a terrible King. I will also say that I was always confident about that. Like, he would have been very bad. He for sure would have came here and been like
with Boogie.
Well, this is my time. Yeah, I mean, he would have been a nice compliment next to DeMarcus. They would have been absolutely terrible defensively.
Yeah, but by defense,
DeMarcus never had somebody who could stretch the floor and clear people out of the paint so he couldn't get double teamed. And I think, I mean, Ryan would have been great for those situations.
Reggie Evans was like a word.
I was just stop. I was like 95% confident that Ryan Anderson would just come in, make whatever $20 million a year, and score like 10 points a game.
Buddy Hield's doing that right now. On that note, B-ball reference. What do we got?
B-ball reference. Well, when we started recording, we had Darren Fox on the list. He is no longer with us on this list. We have another Kings legend. We do have another Kings legend. I didn't even see the actual Kings legend. I thought you were talking about DeLon Wright.
No, sir.
So on this, you know what? This is fine because I don't think we have ever talked about this player. First off, shout out Anthony Hardaway, who had a top tier post-game press conference the other day, yelling at the media, saying
Penny?
That, yes, he pretty much was saying, I'm playing a bunch of freshmen out here. Don't act like we're not. And don't act like that other team isn't playing a bunch of 23 and 24 year olds. And I'm like, my guy, like, this is college basketball. There's no 24, like, Buddy Hield ain't out there no more. Dude, like, there's no 24-year-olds playing basketball,
LaMelo Ball's on the same floor as Udonis Haslam. Haslam's on the bench, but age is in the NBA. You play in the NBA, bro. You were 19 or 20 in the NBA at one point, being guarded by a 32-year-old. It doesn't matter.
It's a great point.
It doesn't matter. It was college to do anything.
Top tier post-game press conference. The actual Kings legend on our list is
It's Jason Williams,
Jay Will, white chocolate.
I think we've talked about him a little bit before, though. And we've said it's not.
Have I said this take? Okay.
Oh, we had the same take, and this I don't think people are gonna
okay.
Like
I was
it.
Like, this is why you and I are buddies, Frank.
Because we stray away from it.
Frank is a positive guy, but this is the only thing that I will say. Frank is negative about, and I love it because this is a take that I really thought I was the only person who had it. And I will also say Jason Williams came to the Kings in 1998-99. I was 3 years old. So I didn't really like watch J. Will, but I obviously have gone back,
seen the
highlights, seen the tape,
stats.
I'm aware. I think I have a good feel for the vibe of what he brought and the importance that he had. However, I will also say that it is bat-ass crazy that Kings fans just act like Jason Williams belongs in the Hall of Fame and the guy should have his jersey retired and all this stuff. I understand culture. I do. I get it. He was a culture changer. He made the team cool. He made the team on SportsCenter. He brought in energy and just a vibe to the Kings that they have probably not had since. He made the team cool. We still to this day, if you go to any music festival in this country, you will see some random person wearing a Jason Williams jersey. His impact is undeniable.
It's an iconic jersey.
Iconic highlights. The man averaged 10 points a game and how many assists? Never even 7.3 assists was the most amount of assists he had with the Kings. I understand, again, like those are just kind of numbers and it probably doesn't speak to the culture that he brought to the team. He made passing cool. He made the team better. Yes, exactly.
I won't deny that.
But at the same time, the team that we all know and love as the glory year Sacramento Kings could not. I sound like a Dr. Seuss book now. Exist without trading Jason Williams for Mike Bibby.
No, I agree.
Not saying like, again, like Jason Williams, totally fine player, but there's just no way that the Kings would have reached those heights without Mike Bibby. Mike Bibby was the perfect player for that team.
Yep.
His crazy clutch shots, which we don't even need to go down the list of. He just was the better fit for the team. He gave, you know, I don't want to say he gave like a more serious tone to the team, but you know, J. Will was kind of about the flash and the flair and the symbolism of what J. Will was. Mike Bibby was just about balling. He was about, well, hey man, I don't care, Kobe, Shaq, Chris Webber, I'm the best player on the floor right now. And for what it was like 5 or 6 years, Mike was the most important player to the Kings. There's no like, way. Yeah.
I'm a J. Will fan. I like J. Will. I'm a King. I grew up a Kings fan. I enjoy J. Will. I like love the highlights like everybody else. Like you said, he brought there was a culture, like the winning attitude and his playmaking was fun to watch. And he fit in so well with Vlade and Weber, who were great playmakers themselves. With the ability to pass as big men. But I think that people, when they have like the discussion of J. Will versus Bibby, the people that kind of say J. Will over Bibby, I just don't really believe you. I really think that J. Will was exciting and he did bring some excitement to the team, but he wasn't what the team needed a little bit more. They had the passing. The whole team was it was the definition of a team. Those early 2000s teams, they needed more of a punch, a scoring punch. And that's what Mike brought. Mike was a scorer that could also make the right pass. Mike was a better defender than Jason Williams, a much better shooter, obviously. And J. Will went and he had a great career. He played for 10, 11 more years, got a ring with the Miami Heat with Shaq and D. Wade. Like he's immortal. He might not be in the Hall of Fame, but he's in basketball immortality. People will remember White Chocolate forever.
Remember Mike Bibby or after remember
for
Mike
sure. Bibby. But I'm just not someone that's going to sit there and say, wow, Jason Williams is a better player than Mike Bibby. I like to think that Mike Bibby, like you said, was exactly what the Kings needed at that time. And that doesn't mean I don't appreciate what J. Will did in the past. It's just I don't think he, you know, obviously the team wouldn't have moved him if Petrie, and again, Petrie was a damn good GM at that time. He knew what he was doing. And I don't know if the Kings made it to the conference finals or should have won the NBA finals, which that's, you know, goes without saying, but without Mike Bibby. So. J. Will, I'm giving you your flowers, though. That highlight reel,
yes,
is it's all
untouchable.
Time. They play it at every Kings game. People love it. And take your flowers.
Honestly, I will say, too, this is more of a merch-driven argument for me. I just don't like the fact that, like, the NBA Jam shirt has J. Will and Chris Webber. I would, every single day of the week, rather have Mike Bibby. I do, too. It's fine. I
it's comfortable.
I like the shirt. It's a very comfortable shirt. But
I like those shirts. I would get more, but Ali said I can't. I have an Aaron Judge and Garrett Cole baseball one. Then I have the Weber and Williams one. And I was like, I want to get another one. She's like, no, you can't. You can't have four of the same shirt.
What sport? I don't know. I just don't like the – you go to some random sports store and they'll have the Mitchell and Ness J. Will. And I'm like, can I get a Bibby? Can I get – maybe get a Weber?
I haven't gone to the store yet this year. Is it still a bunch of J. Will? Do they have Bibby hanging out?
I also have not been in there, but I don't think I have seen a Mike Bibby piece of merch. I don't even remember really seeing them in the later Arco days. Like, I feel like they kind of like really cleared out of all that.
He had
even like pop up. Can you get a Bobby Jackson jersey anywhere? I mean, I know Bobby Jackson was a bench player, but
I bet you can.
I don't think you can. I really not a fresh one. I got my girlfriend a Bobby Jackson jersey off eBay, but I really don't think you can get like a Bobby Jackson jersey, any of that.
Yeah, we might have to go in there in the next home game and take a look around. I also want to buy a couple things. I usually get like a T-shirt and a sweatshirt every year. Mm-hmm. I haven't done it yet. I like the Sacktown merch. I'll probably get some of that stuff, but I'm not a big jersey guy anymore. I feel like I'm not
never have been. I'm a big jersey. I'm a huge jersey guy, but
I know I can't really pull that off, but I wish I could.
Probably have like upwards of 20 jerseys.
I'm a t-shirt guy. It's just, I don't know if I can't pull off. If I wore a jersey, it's probably for me looks a little too fratty, I think, or like,
I could see that. I could see how
like
you would
douchey. Yeah. People might think I'm like an ass or something, you know,
a bro tank.
Yeah. It's like, what's up, dude?
What's up, dude?
My Mike Bibby jersey, dude. Also that jersey when I was in college, like in Chico, I saw the J. Will jersey all the time. All the time. And I was like, with strike conversations up with people and say, are you a Kings fan? And someone say, yeah, someone say no, they just like the jersey. So, Coke machine of the week, whole team gets it. Whole team, whole franchise, everyone.
Monty McNair.
I think it's like his ninth Coke machine. And then also
Monty's getting on the scheme. Have you seen those YouTube videos of people who like, that's not a scheme, but like it's like you can get rich even at 18, I'm a millionaire because I
like a pyramid scheme?
Yeah. It's like a thing for like people, you know, under like a first job kind of like, you can't get hired, but like you can buy vending machines and like make money off that.
Are you asking me to get involved? Did you fall for
I'm
this?
Just saying, if you ever have some time, go to the Folsom outlet and please use vending machine number 74, the M&M one.
What happened? What's going on here?
I'm telling you, go on YouTube after this and look up vending machine, I don't know, like vending machine money making.
Okay.
And like people legitimately are like, you should like invest in Coke machines. And
maybe we should put all of our savings into buying a Coke
machine.
This
poverty franchise should, you know. Anyway,
Jersey, sorry. Who we got? We got the Sixers or StubHub still.
Ooh,
the jersey patch.
Yes, let's see here. Yeah, I'm gonna go with StubHub. That sounds right.
And then we'll do Knicks. We'll
the Knicks are a tough one, man. The Knicks probably have a massive sponsor. Oh my gosh! And what do you know? It's no longer StubHub. It is the ever-present Crypto.com.
Jesus Christ!
For Philadelphia, who would have guessed? Crypto.com taking over your arenas, taking over your jerseys, and then the New York Knickerbockers. Let me see here.
Let me guess, New York.
I did see.
Just a picture of a bagel.
I am just quickly learning that there is just no time. I mean, the Kings Blue Diamond sponsorship was really special because there are no teams that really have like local links to their nope. sponsorship anymore. I think also Harley Davidson is like based in Milwaukee. So like, I guess that used to be one, but now sense. The, oh, hold on. Conflicting reports. Oh, no, no, no. Nope. The New York Knicks have Squarespace as their sponsor. Okay. Shout out Squarespace. I use okay. Squarespace for my, personal portfolio. This is not paid for by Squarespace, but, shout out Squarespace.
Shout out Squarespace. Sponsor us. Okay, so we're back Tuesday. The Kings have the Sixers and the Knicks.
Will the Kings pick up a victory in the next two games, Frank, by the time we record?
Yes. Yes.
They're going to beat Philadelphia in a showcase game of showcase games. And Ben Simmons is actually going to play. That's going to be my prediction. He's going to play one game.
He shows up, and when the game starts, that's how they announce the trade. Ben Simmons and Buddy Hield just swap jerseys, and they start mm-hmm. playing. That's how they announce the trade happened.
I just want a Frosty. That's what Ben Simmons said.
I just wanted a Frosty.
Shout out Isaiah.
No. I think they win one of the next two because it just would make it makes no sense and it does at the same time. So I'm gonna believe that they're gonna.
Seven straight.
Yeah, seven I mean straight they're gonna losses. Lose both. I'm just trying to be optimistic again. He's back, optimistic Frank.
I just want to say also that the Kings are after you know if they pick up these two losses to Philly and New York, they will then be two more losses, which would be. Brooklyn and Golden State after that away from the vaunted 9-game losing streak we were promised to avoid.
We're back.
The Kings are currently they have the Laker and Rocket wins their last two victories have saved them from a what would that be
like 13 14? 12
it would be a 12 they would currently be on a 12-game losing streak.
Love it. I love it.
Thank goodness for the Lakers and Rockets for saving.
Thank heavens for Tyreek Evans.
Is there any way? I've been thinking about this too. Sorry, we're kind of rambling here at the end. But is there any? No, I'm not even. I was gonna say, is there any way that Alvin Gentry doesn't
finish
make
the season
it at the end of the year?
No, nah, he'll make it.
He's been through a lot. Like, I mean,
I feel very bad for him.
He picked up after what, like Luke Lassen. 15 games or something like that.
He did say on the Nick Cowell show, he did say that he was a part of the team that had the biggest point differential mm-hmm. loss like in the history of the NBA. I think it was like 150 something to 70 something with I think that was in Denver. He was a part of that coaching staff. So he's seen worse.
But he wasn't ahead of it.
No, he'll finish the year though. Like there's no what are they going to do?
Like, no, I didn't think he was going to get fired, but like, is there maybe, you know, the last time the Kings were in this situation, obviously George Karl, that was a very specific situation where George Karl probably should have been brought on immediately, but they, for some weird reason, just had some delay. I can't really remember what it was, but is there any way that the Kings, yeah, they have to, right? I mean,
they're going to do a full coaching search this offseason, I think.
Does Monty McNair like get to make, I mean, he's going to make that decision, but like, I think that's what people have speculated in the past with Luke and his contract being synced up. Like, does it make sense to have Monty McNair make that decision?
Yeah, I mean, if he's the GM, but
well, for sure. I mean, if he's the GM, but that's more what I'm saying is like, why if Monty McNair is also on the hot seat, we're going to be in the same situation where this GM might not be here a year after hiring this head coach that he just signed for 3-4 years, and maybe we don't want this head coach. I don't know. I digress. We can talk about it on a different episode.
the phrase will cross that bridge when we get to it. That's all. I mean, I guess we'll have to just wait and see. I mean, I think that they're if Monty's, I don't think they're gonna fire him. But that's a whole different discussion. No matter what they do, I don't think they're gonna fire him. So,
yeah, I don't think so either.
Just a feeling.
All right. Well, until next week, we somehow managed to pull an hour and 20 minutes out of this podcast.
That's insane.
We were planning on not
30 minutes,
an hour, 20 minutes. Yeah. So I hope you all enjoyed somehow us talking for this long. Sorry if we rambled and ranted and actually didn't say anything at all, but I thought this was a good episode. So
same. We're biased,
I don't think we talked about any actual on the court stuff, which is great. I think that's why I had such a good time.
There's no need to anymore. Who cares?
I'm going to keep saying it. Hopefully the next time we record, we're talking about some new players and a new deal. And I don't believe it, but maybe it'll happen. For Frankie Cardicelli, I am Chris Watkins. Hopefully the Sacramento Kings show up for one of these episodes. Thank you all for listening, and please make sure to, I don't know, rate, comment, subscribe, like,
cry.
Definitely comment, and definitely cry. That's it. That's all I got.
All right.
Goodbye. That's all we got.